This presentation, some elements of it, some of you will recognize, and please don't give it away. What I want to be talking about, is parasitiform phylogeny, and essentially what I'm looking at is a really simple problem. There are only four taxa. Mesostigmata, holothyroids, exodids, often grouped together as parasitiform sensu stricto, and opular carids. So a relatively simple issue, but it does have some consequences in that if you want to understand the basic area, basic evolution of mites, it's really nice to know what the basic relationships are in at least a group like parasitiforms. So what I'm going to start off with is sort of look at morphological ideas on this versus molecules, and then poke around a little bit at seeing if I can line them up a bit. Let's start off here with F. Lindquist's work in 1984 in Congress Proceedings. I really like this, always liked this paper, because it was such a nice summary of what different people were thinking, what their characters were, and it was a classic example of F.'s reasoning, very thorough and very careful. You will not get that from me. But anyway, among the groups that seem to have good support, the acariforms nicely supported, parasitiforms sensu stricto, so that group of three, seem to be pretty good. Parasitiforms sensu lato, a lot of good apomorphies for that. Acari, probably monophyletic, as most characters seem to be going that way, and recently it's possibly a sister group to Acari. Everett, I hope that I transliterated this accurately as you intended. Now, one problem is, if you're dealing at this level, you're really going to have to deal with other groups of arachnids. And if you're going to do that, you immediately find out that the terminology and the characters they use, outside of mites, that is a whole different world from what we use in mites. And the two still haven't really been reconciled all too well. So if we're going from the arachnologist view, Jeff Scholl's latest paper on that, I really like 200 characters. Man, this is heavy stuff. And in fact, he did a pretty good job for the groups that we care about here. He had reasonable representation. The problem is that a lot of these characters deal with musculature and all these beautiful things that have been worked out for other groups of arachnids and for not too many mites. I know, Enrico, you have worked on this, but we still have a couple of things to work out there. So, end result is, it's very difficult to translate this to these characters to mites. I tried. Also, the results otherwise, ricinoleids in this case within the mites, but still the mites with ricinoleids as a nice group. That's kind of a pleasant result. Actually, F provided a whole bunch of apomorphies that are more on the acarological side for the group of parasitiforms sensu stricto. I'm going back to here, this little group. I'll let you look at most of those. Most of them seem to be holding out fairly well, and I can't really argue too much with them. What I'm willing to argue with is another paper that actually did a phylogenetic analysis. Lechtinen in 91 did one. Please note that the characters he uses have no overlap with what Lindquist did before. I never understood why you can't read previous papers and actually use those characters too. And so what he ended up with is a reduction of Leary fissures, which is probably, that's true. Opular carids have a lot of Leary fissures, and that's almost certainly a derived character, so it doesn't count. Male orifice rounded and sternal. Well, the male orifice in opular carids is also sternal, and whether it's rounded, I don't know, because it's not sclerotized, which leaves sort of the sclerotization of the abdomen as the only thing, and that's not a very strong one. Oh, well. He also had characters for holothyroids plus exodids, so to resolve the rest of it, the presence of something like a hallux organ. There are some cincillae that are inside, sunk into the tarsus one in some holotyrids, but it also occurs in oplercarids, and it occurs on legs 1 and 2 in resinoleids. I'm not sure where you're going to make the cutoff there. Muscle insertion on the subcapitular apodeme that allows holotyrids and ticks to further extend the natosoma and to bend it further ventrally. That seems to be shared, so okay, fine. End result, that is his little tree, and that seems to be a tree that goes fairly well with what most folks think based on morphology. The big thing here is oplercarids are weird. They don't belong. They have so many different characters that don't fit, so take them out. So there's some example of that and some pictures of a nice ovipositor and a set of four stigmatal openings. Everything else has only one and seems to be perfectly fine with that. So we have this what I would call the general morphological view. And then came this little paper by Morel et al. In 2005, based on 18S. And here we have the odd little result that oplercarids suddenly seem to be popping within the parasitiforms sensu stricto. So that's a bit odd, but it was weak taxon sampling and a limited sample of markers, only 18S. So with a bit of reasoning, you can say, okay, we can forget that. I did some work with some folks. At least we improved the taxon sampling a little bit and added 28S. And in this particular case, the oplercarids here come out of sister group to mesostigs, which Dave Walter really didn't like. But it depended a little bit on analysis method. So in some analyses, it actually oplercarids popped out as the sister group to all other parasitiforms. Another point to make here is, and this has to do with rooting of this of my particular problem, is Acari still came out as monophyletic, so acariforms would be a good outgroup, even if they had weak support. Next analysis, David et al. In 2010. Ah, there went the Acari. split up the Acari with almost the same kind of data that that we were using, and ended up with the possibility of pseudoscorpions as sister group to parasitiforms. All right, going back to my little problem. I still was irritated about taxon sampling, so I did it again, and this time had all three families of holotyrids in there, had a better representation of oplercarids there on the above there, and had pretty well, I thought, a fairly good taxon sampling. The annoying part here being that oplercarids are the sister group to holotyrid sticks, and mesostigs are out of there. Still one missing, Natalie Ellett's. And I think a month ago, a paper by Mans et al. In PLOS, yes, they found a whole bunch of new Nuttallialids, and they did some 18S, so just in case you wanted to know what that does, almost nothing. There's Nuttalliella here, a sister group to Argacids. In their paper, it was sister group to all other Ixodids, but it has no effect on this particular marker. Very strong support for oplercarids plus holotyrids plus Ixodids. Okay, so we have a problem in that the molecules are really not agreeing with the morphology. And that goes both ways, whether it's the relationships within the parasitiforms or whether it's dealing with Acari as a monophyletic group. So my idea was, okay, well, is there at least something, some nice morphological characters that we might be able to discover that could support oplercarids plus holotyrids plus Ixodids? Because I hate to have a situation where the molecules tell me one thing and the morphology doesn't seem to back it up at all. I hope Gerd Alberti doesn't think that I'm abusing his data, but sperm morphology might be one of those. At least the sperm shape in opilar carrots, holothyroids, and ticks is really quite similar, and it is a little bit different from even the basal forms of mesostigmata. So there could be something if you wanted to press it. Then there's other characteristics. Can we get different characters? And one of those that I've been chasing after for a very long time is cetacean. Now, generally speaking, for holothyroids and ticks, nobody uses body cetacean because it's a hopeless thing. They're hypertrichous. That doesn't work. But larvae work. Go for the first ones. And yes, the arrangement of the idiosomal scincillae in larvae does seem to be, in all of these groups, fit fairly well with an established model, Lindquist and Evans model, for mesostigmata. In fact, I've argued before that actually that model is given its best showing in opilar carrots and not in mesostigmata. Same thing for palps and leg sheathi. Normally speaking, in mesostigmata, you have whorls of six, two ventral, two dorsal, two lateral. You will see the same thing in larval forms of holothyroids, ticks, or opilar carrots. They will add more later on, so they destroy the whole thing, but as long as you look at the larvae, it works. So here we have, for example, a larva of Diplotyrus, and this is a perfectly, you know, you may quibble with what name I gave individual CD, but it's very clear that this is not too difficult. It's workable. Opilar carrots, a little more tricky, because, hey, they have no CD. That's highly annoying. There's CD here, a few CD here, but then there are these things that are stretched out a little bit, symbols, Leary fissures. Leary fissures and CD are both mechanoreceptors. They seem to be almost interchangeable. And for an example here, these two guys here, which will be equivalent to the paraanal CD and mesostigmata, are in exactly the position that they should have for the series of Leary fissures. Oops. Go back you. Bottom line of it, it really fits perfectly well. There are three sets, three pairs, the J's, the Z's, the S's. And the nice advantage here of opilar carrots is you have the same thing on the venter, so the JV, the ZV, and the SV. Everything perfect, everything filled. These CD here line up with these, not perfectly in this example, but I'll show you a better one later. So again, equivalence of CD and Leary fissures to some degree. Legs, here's the legs of an opilar carrot. It's a perfect good whorl of six, plus a couple of really funny things in the middle, but we can ignore those. If you go to a tritonymph, you will notice that this suddenly has become a whorl of eight, plus a whole bunch of funny things in the middle, but as I said, can't think of everything. This is a leg of a larval holothyroid, perfect whorls of six, not even the little things in the middle, so that's really pleasant. I have not fully worked out what this now does in terms of characters, because there are some strange aspects of this, but I think the systems that we've used for mesostigmata are certainly applicable to all of these groups. So sadly, yes, there is some options for comparison. I haven't quite done it. Then there's one thing that has been considered as a difference between opilar carrots and everybody else, which was the number of segments. And I think this is especially interesting if indeed opilar carrots are within the within the parasitiformes, because then the number of segments in opilar carrots might say something about the number of segments in the other groups. And opilar carrots are the way to go here, obviously. Nice signs of segmentation. Look at these nice little stripes. They are so beautiful. A little switch here to developmental genetics, which is actually, it has helped in insects, ruin insect morphology, which was used to be beautiful. We could talk for one or two lectures about the head segmentation, and all of this has now been solved, and now you have only about half an hour to deal with that. It has also come to arachnids, And this is some of the images from Maximilian Telford and Richard Thomas's work on Archegosides. Similar things have been done for spiders. And what they were looking for is sort of markers for different appendages for different... the one thing that doesn't show up too well there, but does show up here, is a little extra dot in front of the collisural segment they call the ocular segment. This would be the segment where you find the eyes. Now, if we start with that, if there's eyes, it's the ocular segment. It makes a lot of sense in a number of cases. So here we have the great image of the Tabernacris, and this would be little thing here, might end up as being the ocular segment, although some folks also call it the aspidosoma. I don't think too many people will object to this for acariforms. I'm not sure what anybody has proposed the same thing for parasitiforms. I think they are exactly the same. They have to be, because the palpal segment is moved forward to an anterior position, which means that the ocular segment, which used to be in the front, has to move to the top. If we get that, then the protozoma in all mites, and probably a lot of other arachnids, will have 5 segments. Okay, deals with that. Now, what is left? And again, I'm going to the immatures in ocular carids. In this case, the protonymphs. Protonymphs and larvae are virtually the same. You count the number of these rows, which is really nice and easy to do, and you get 10 of these, plus the anal valves. Well, this wasn't perfectly done in this drawing. And on the venter, right behind these general areas here, you get 8. So a little bit more on the dorsal side. Ah, well, that's fun. Other thing, you look at the deutonymph. In this case, Salvacaris actually gets CD, but only gets them in the deutonymph. And it's a very annoying, extremely messy scene that nobody wants to deal with. Took me days to figure this out. And then found out that it's not 10, it's 11 series here, which is the exact same number as in larvae of Neacaris, other genus of Opelicarids. One more thing that I wanted to say. Here, that lineup of these things with the CD here. So the back row of CD might be another one. Another series that we have to deal with. So, got all of those. You now have 4 extra rows on the dorsum relative to the venter. And those would fit perfectly well with the genital, pregenital, legs 4 and leg 3, with leg 3 being CD on the shield. There is now pregenital and genital are fused in the larva and protonymph of some of those, separate in the deutonymph, so there's an ontogenetic component. We can start playing with that. And now we get the segmentation of ocular carids, and I'm feeling fairly confident about this. Propodosomal group 5, metapodosoma 2, no 2 more, total 18. Van der Hammen, whose work has been cited and cited and cited again, wanted somewhere between 20 and 21, and he didn't include a collisural segment. He counted really strange. I tried to do exactly what he did, and I still come out with 18. So, if you want more segmental borders, I put them in for you for ease of observation. Beautiful, almost no distortion even. So, can we use it for all the other parasitiforms? Because that would be nice. Assumptions here, everything has an ocular segment, whether they have eyes or not. Everything has 18 segments. Let's see if it could work, if we can twist this thing and make it work. Pregenital and genital often fuse on the dorsum. That's actually not just ocular carids, that's in a lot of groups of arachnids. Segments of legs 3 and 4 may or may not be expressed on the dorsal side. In acariforms, they're not, generally. This may be variable. It looks like it's variable in ticks. Okay, so let's start with exodids, because they're pleasant. They have eyes, which is a good marker. And they have festoons, which are also excellent markers. I played with that a number of years ago, and actually not everything that I did was wrong. So there we go. We got segmentation here for the festoons. That's exactly the same. And there we go for the rest. And the great advantage here is that if you look at that older paper, I really got messed up in this front end because I didn't know what was going on, and I think I have a way of getting around it now. It's all one segment. Yahoo! That leaves mesostigmata. Now, mesostigmata and holothyroids, for that matter, I don't have eyes to deal with, so I don't have that marker. And I don't really have anything like festoons, so it has to be ketotaxy only. And here I'm going to abuse one of Evert's beautiful images of an acid. Yes, this is Eulasiosaeus in a strange form. And how about that? If I'm doing this, taking this, the whole rows that in that particular paper, Lindquist and Evans was absolutely said, well, this looks pretty good, but it's not necessarily that this reflects ancestral segmentation. I'm going to argue that it may well. Then go with the numbers here, effused, pregenital, genital. I'm going to say that if there's any expression of leg 3-4, it's going to be on the side here. And this little front end almost has to be the equivalent of the ocular segment. This has the great advantage, for me at least, that I've never really been able to understand the nomenclature of the CD in that particular area. And the Christian and Karg idea that has come out of giving those different numbers, if this is correct, it doesn't matter. It's all ocular segment, and you sort of solve the problem that way. So I think it's possible, although with a lot more distortion, especially in the ventral region. There's a lot of dashed lines here because I simply don't know what to make of this. All right. Conclusions of all of this. I think it's at least plausible that all parasitiforms have the same number of segments. What does that do for the great idea of the relationships among the major groups? Probably nothing, because it means that all of them have the same state and I can't do anything with it, so it doesn't show any differentiation. One interesting point here, dorsal shields do not, under any condition it seems like, delimit segmental borders. They go over it fairly easily. Okay, so there we have that. Oops, sorry. Yes, I'm almost at the end. If those molecules are right, I was looking again at these odd characters of opulent carrots. If the molecules are right, if they are opulent carrots are within the parasitiforms, Tone's organ might be derived. The Rutellum carnicula, I think, almost have to be homologous, because else you have to derive all these things several times. It makes no sense. Presence of Leary fishes rather than CD is going to be derived. Particulate feeding in opulent carrots is going to be derived, especially if pseudoscorpions are the sister group. So a number of the bizarre characters we can probably plausibly describe as derived, and then hopefully they will go away. So this would almost be a talk with a really nice positive ending. So we have to take care of that, because I have no idea what to do with this. Opulent carrots have a pre-larva. If anybody ever works with holothyroids, please look at this egg, see if there's a pre-larva in the egg, because we're not sure whether the pre-larva in opulent carrots hatches. I'm hoping there is. The four pairs of stigmata I can't handle. I can't call that a derived character. And the palpal pretarsus, the claw there, in opulent carrots is a nice set of claws. It's highly modified in holothyroids and in mesostigs and gone in ticks. I don't know what to do with that either. So this was a talk that started really optimistic and then has to end on a little bit of a fizzle. But thanks.